everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. As you listen to this, it is Sunday, the 30th of December. There is only 2 days left of this year before we can put it behind us and get another year of Donald Trump in office. Before we look ahead to the glory of Brexit, let's go back in time to a simpler time, Sandra. A more tame time in the world of professional wrestling.
A more tame time when we were just like impeaching our president. No big deal.
We are here for the December 28th episode of Monday Night Raw, the last Raw of the year. But as always, before we talk about the show, I'd like to fill you in on what happened on Heat the night before.
Yes, please do, because I have some questions.
Okay. You did send me one thing which I thought was blatantly obvious, but we will get to it on the episode. You were like, why is this happening? And I was like, did you not watch last week's that we podcasted about yesterday? Anyway, we'll get to it. So on Heat, Vince McMahon comes out to start, and he brings out Kane, and he points out that it was Vince McMahon who got Kane released from the mental institution. And he says that Kane is grotesquely scarred, a complete moron and a freak, but he's working for Vince now, so that's not a problem. But if he ever betrays Vince, it will be a problem. Tonight, Kane is going to take on X-Pac in the main event, and Vince would appreciate it if Kane would disembowel him. And then he forces Kane to use his voice box to say thank you.
He forced Kane to use the voice box, or did Kane use the voice box of his own volition because he's so grateful?
Felt more like force. Felt more like, say thank you
with
your voice
box. Cult leader Vince McMahon.
I know, right? Then the Stooges offered to get Vince some coffee, but Vince wanted Kane to get some coffee instead.
Oh boy, that can only go well.
In the feud that never ends, we got Mosh versus Golga for the Headbangers and the Oddities. And as Thrasher was choking out Golga on the ropes, George the Animal Steel runs in for the DQ in 90 seconds. So they decide to cut out the Oddities' entrance and celebration. So everything that is good about them, we do not get to see. Just the wrestling.
That's a bummer. Just the wrestling, which is what everyone wants from an Oddities match.
Up next, we get an interview with Jackie and Teddy with Michael Cole, where they are called PMS, officially.
It has begun.
So they're in the ring with Michael Cole. Teddy now hates men, which is fine. And then, like, Jackie tries to give Michael Cole a wedgie, but it doesn't quite work, so she just kicks him in the balls and then they leave. So the thing is, with Mark Henry last week, you know, he was trying to get with him, so it's understandable they go, okay, we're just going to fuck you up. Because he deserved it a little bit, right? He was wanting to have sex with him, he was wanting to use them and abuse them potentially. So they wanted to just get one back on him by doing kinky shit to him, okay? I can understand.
And he was
that.
Being a terrible friend to D'Lo Brown because, like, he should not have gone for this sexual adventure when he had a tag team match coming up. Like, you don't want to rush these sorts of sexy times.
Exactly. But poor Michael Cole, what's he done to you? He's a war correspondent.
He is a war correspondent. I mean, do you think Michael Cole was a war correspondent and was like, okay, wrestling, this will be an easy gig? And then, you know, all of the things that happened to Michael Cole have happened to Michael Cole. He would be such an interesting man to sit down and have a conversation with.
I know, right? The Stooges try to boss Kane around, and it does not go well.
Shocking.
They quickly realize, we're not going to do that anymore. We got a tag team match with Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart against Val Venus and The Godfather. It cracked me up that in Godfather's graphic, when he had the ladies with him, it said Godfather with friends.
Godfather with friends?
So good.
Friends.
Yep,
you
friends.
You mean the women that he gives away for free and refuses to pay? Those are his friends.
He offers Deborah a chance to come aboard the whole train, which she declines. And then in the end, Deborah ends up coming in for the distraction, so Jarrett gets the pinfall, so Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart get the win. Then we get Ken Shamrock, the Big Boss Man, defend the tag titles against the Hardy Boys, which could have been really good if Boss Man and Shamrock were able to give them anything, which they did not. So Shamrock finishes Jeff Hardy off with the ankle lock a minute and 55 seconds, and then the Acolytes come in and destroy the tag team champions, because people want the Acolytes, apparently. Don't know who they are.
Ooh. Who wants the Acolytes? No one wants the Acolytes.
The main event of the show, Kane versus X-Pac. Commissioner Shawn Michaels is there with a jacket and a tie, but no shirt. And he is so pilled up in the pre-match promo. It is unreal. He sends DX to the back. And Kane demolishes X-Pac and basically squashes him in 86 seconds. And then post-match, He's going to Tombstone when DX run out for the save. But yeah, X-Pac gets completely squashed, and that's the end of Heat.
I mean, it sounds like an eventful-ish episode. Maybe not quite as bonkers as some weeks, but...
So now, we are here for the last episode of Raw of 1998 from Albany, New York, live December 28th, 1998. We kick off the show with the corporation. Vince McMahon tells Shane that everyone that attacked him last week will pay. He pledges to humiliate and fire Commissioner Shawn Michaels when he shows up to the arena. Which, now, you were saying, why is Vince going after Shawn? Well, Shawn held everyone back while his son got attacked.
Right, but I mean, it seemed like something else must have happened. Because, like, why wouldn't Vince just fire Shawn? And I know that later on he's like, you fire people when you want to fire people.
He
but
wants
like
to humiliate him.
Apparently, but I mean, was he really humiliated here? No. Like, this just was stupid. I didn't understand why he's like, all right, I'm going to build this whole entire episode around firing the commissioner, who I don't actually give any responsibility at all anyway. Because, I mean, we learned that last week, right? Shawn Michaels doesn't actually have power. Like, he might have as much power as William Regal had when he was matchmaker on NXT, like NXT Redemption. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of it, right? Like, Shawn Michaels doesn't have any actual power in the company. And so why are we building this whole entire show around the premise of, like, when Shawn Michaels shows up to work suspiciously late, then he's going to be fired? Like, I don't give a shit.
But you got to remember,
it's just as dumb as, like, I'm going to fire Baron Corbin from being GM.
Well, no, I'm going to disagree with you, because this is a time where they're going head-to-head with Nitro. So everything is about keeping people watching. So you've got to do angle. Like, nowadays, they can do what they want because there's no competition. But back then, you had to keep people invested. So they have to figure out a way to go, oh, well, you know, he's going to try and humiliate and fire Shawn Michaels. So a lot of people, I know not you, but a lot of people were invested. And we'd be like,
maybe it's
well,
just that I'm completely uninvested in the authority structure of Monday Night Raw and don't really care about druggy Shawn Michaels and whether or not he's in charge.
Yeah, but a lot of people did. So that's why they were doing it as a show-long storyline. Shawn Michaels is also, in the next couple of weeks, going to be sort of taking time off because he's about to get back surgery, which would go on to allow him to wrestle again in the future. So that's happening. But the corporation invade the boiler room looking for Mankind. Mankind tries a sneak attack, but he can't fight off all of them. Vince tells Mankind he will get a hardcore title shot later in the evening as a belated Christmas gift. And the whole thing's done here. Kane's looking like a sympathetic figure because the Stooges are yelling at him. So there's a lot going on here. Setting up that, again, they want to fuck with Mankind, and I guess we'll see what happens when Shawn turns up.
They're just so mean to Mankind. Well, and I was confused at the beginning of the show, too, because I thought that they were, like, looking for Shawn Michaels in the boiler room at first, because they were talking about how they were going to fire Shawn Michaels, and then they go into the boiler room, and I just wasn't really sure what was going on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they find Mankind, and they beat him up, and it's just like, I feel so bad for Mankind. Everyone's so mean to him.
They are very mean to him. The opening contest is Road Dogg versus Val Venus for the hardcore title. The corporation walks out. Less than 2 minutes in, Test attacks Val Venus. Errol Hebner calls for the bell, not really understanding that this is a hardcore match.
Like, I was so confused because Test comes out and is like, you know, hitting Val Venus or whatever. And then they're all kind of brawling on the outside and there's the bell. And I was like, this is a hardcore match. Why is there a DQ? And they don't undo the bell either. Like, they just keep ringing the bell multiple times and then it's over. So I was kind of wondering if this was the corporation changing the rules again, because Vince McMahon said that Mankind was going to get a shot at the hardcore title against Road Dogg later on in the evening. And then they were like, oh, but Commissioner Michaels has other plans and it's going to be Val Venus versus the Road Dogg. So
it's
they
probably
just
more that
Errol Hebner
was incompetent.
I mean, that's also very accurate. So just none of this made sense to me. And it, you know, obviously, like, Val Venus is not someone I wanted to win the hardcore championship. I like Val Venus less than I like the Road Dogg, so there's that.
Road Dogg does not throw bathrooms
at women. He spent so long gyrating, Kenny. Like, so long he stood over Road Dogg and gyrated. Like, what is the point of that? You're going to lose. You're just stupid.
I mean, a lot of wrestlers are stupid. Like, a lot of them are. But, you know, he's a porn star. He wants to show off his junk.
Gyrate twice, maybe three times. Do not stand there and gyrate for a full 30 seconds.
I did particularly enjoy Vince.
He deserved to get beaten up. It's my favorite thing that Test has ever done.
I did love Vince McMahon's post-match promo where he tells Road Dogg he would defend his title against Mankind. And then just like goes in this crazy torn lover rant about Shawn Michaels and like, I'm going to fire him for not helping Shane. And, you know, he wants to fire Michaels, which he'd love to do to every member of the audience. And he's just going crazy. And I'm always up for a bit of crazy Vince. So he...
I mean, he really was hurt badly by Shawn Michaels, obviously.
Yeah, and this is the real... I mean, I think what really happened behind the scenes is that Vince tried to rekindle a one-night love affair, or one more night of their love affair, and Shawn declined. And that's really the story of what's happened here.
I think so. I mean, Vince was like, I made you my commissioner. I told you you could make the matches. I just wanted you in my life again. Why can't we give it another go? And Shawn Michaels is like, sorry, man, I've moved on. I have the drugs now.
I like chicks now. I'm seeing a Nitro girl. Al Snow is still freaking out about his bloodbath last week. But he's like, so either he's like not washed in a week.
Is this when the Stooges were like mocking Kane too?
Yeah. So Al Snow's
that
freaking
was
out.
So mean. Well, we'll I said that second. That was gonna.
We'll get to that in a second. But Al Snow, I want to just preface this. So Al Snow is still annoyed that he had a bloodbath last week. So either Al Snow has not washed for a week, or he's been bloodbathed again.
Well, no, they said he hasn't changed since last week.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you know, you talk about things not making sense. I mean, are we meant to believe that Al Snow has just walked around for a week and just not washed? This is like, you know, like,
I mean,
they
it's Al Snow. Would you really put it past him?
It's like when, like, on commentary today, like, they'll maybe say to Renee Young, you know, what does Dean Ambrose think? She's like, I don't know. And you're like, you live with him. You're married
no,
to him.
No, it's exactly that same kind of thing. It's like when, you know, Stephanie and Triple H are having drama and it's like, I haven't talked to my husband since last week's episode of Monday Night Raw. And it's like, bullshit. Like, you have children together.
And then Vince is talking with Kane. The Stooges are making fun of him behind his back. And Vince...
It's so mean. Pat Patterson's, like, mocking the voice box. And Gerald Briscoe's, like, making out that he smells or something. And, like, mocking how tall he is. The Stooges are so mean to Kane. Kane and Mankind should be friends. Because everyone's just mean to them. And they are oddballs of society.
Vince tells Kane that he's got the task of going after a member of DX. We don't know who it is. But yeah, the Stooges are... The thing is, I just don't understand why the Stooges think that they're not eventually going to get battered by Kane.
Like, of course they're going to get battered by Kane. Like, it is poor planning, but they deserve it. Like, they deserve to get battered by Kane at this point. And I said this was going to happen, right? Like, I said I wasn't so sure that I liked Kane with the corporation because I didn't feel like the corporation were really going to appreciate Kane, and I didn't think that they were going to treat him well. Wow, I was right.
Up next, we get Edge versus Al Snow. Edge is using his original entrance theme and not the Brood one, which I don't really know why.
Yeah, I noticed that. It was the first time we'd heard it since the Brood came along. I mean, I love that song, that you think you know me, you know, you think you know me. It's one of my faves, but it was kind of strange because he's obviously still with the Brood. It's not like they've split or anything like that. Edge's facial expressions are great.
Yeah, he's very good. Al Snow obviously is still angry about his bloodbath. Head is different this week because it's a shaved head.
Head
and has blood
been
on it.
Shaved and it has like a gag too around its mouth.
Al Snow is going after Edge until the Job Squad run out. And Edge basically beats Al Snow via DQ because the Job Squad run out. So Al Snow then escapes through the audience for some reason. I'm still not really sure why, because his friends came out. I mean, the Brood were out as well, but Al Snow just escapes because he's mental. So
I don't think Al Snow understands the world. I do find it interesting that Head has become an expression of the inner turmoil of Al Snow.
Yeah, it is.
But I thought Edge was awesome here. Like, I mean, this is probably one of the best Al Snow matches we've seen in a while, like since Leaf Cassidy maybe, because I thought, you know, they wrestled pretty well together, which is kind of rare for Al Snow these days. And when Edge was kind of like walking up the ramp afterwards, you know, after the Brood kind of attacked the Job Squad and they were all kind of fighting, Edge just had this kind of almost maniacal look like, yeah, I enjoy this fighting. And I don't know, I really like him.
We see Sable warming up backstage for her defense of the Raw the women's title. We see Slam of the Week of her beating Jackie at Survivor Series. But before we get to that, Sondra, Dennis Knight's backstage talking to X-Pac.
Fuck right off. Someone told him to be here. He told Dennis Knight to be here. Whoever he is can fuck right off and get out of my life and off of my television. Because why the fuck would you bring Dennis Knight back when we were a Dennis Knight free society? I was so much happier with no Dennis Knight in my life, Kenny. Why? Why is this happening?
You never, maybe as his next character, he will win you over.
I doubt it.
But you need to enter with an open mind.
I'm trying, but I know there's nakedness involved at some point. And Dennis Knight naked is not something I want to see.
That's a long way off.
Okay.
So the next match is supposed to be Sable defend the women's title again, but before the match starts, the woman who goes on to be Tori gets in the ring, gives Sable a white rose before being taken away by security.
So this I found interesting because, like, the only reason I knew that we'd seen her before is because when she was in the crowd that one time, you told me that she was Tori and you mentioned how much plastic surgery she'd had, right? So when she came in, I vaguely recognized her, but like, are they purporting that anyone in the audience is going to recognize her from whenever that was, like months ago, that she was just in the crowd shown on camera once?
I mean, I guess you're meant to believe that.
But I don't feel like anyone would know who she was. I mean, it's like Test being the bodyguard for Motley Crue, right? They keep mentioning that he was the bodyguard for Motley Crue, but like, who actually remembers that Motley Crue segment other than maybe like Road Dogg's terrible trying to sing with Motley Crue? Like, that's what I remember about that segment, not that there was a tall guy standing bodyguard for him. Like, I mean, I guess like bless you for trying to add details and storyline, but no one's gonna remember that kind of shit. If it's like a nameless face, that doesn't register with people, right? Like, you're not gonna remember, oh, remember when they showed a blonde woman on camera for 30 seconds in the crowd one time and she didn't do anything except stare? No, like, who's gonna remember that? That's not a story. So, I mean, I guess it was kind of interesting that there was a fan in the ring and she was trying to give Sable a rose and that kind of stuff. I mean, that could go on to be an interesting thing. We've seen fans get involved before and become Steve Blackman. So is Tori going to be
Yes.
Steve Blackman? We shall see.
Now did you understand the context of facing Spider Lady?
I only did when they mentioned Moolah specifically.
So this was when they took the belt off Wendi Richter in 1985 by having Moolah under a mask as Spider Lady and sort of shoot beating her in the middle of the ring. So Sable is booked to face Spider Lady, who attacks her from behind, whips her with a belt, and then the Oddities with George the Animal steel in tow rush the
See,
ring.
when Spider Lady came out, I just was remembering that time that Jacqueline dressed up as like a crew member or whatever and had a mask on. So I was like, oh, is it Jacqueline again? But then I figured out it was Luna kind of right away.
So yeah, so she unmasks it's Luna. Luna's screaming it's her time. She needs more respect. Michael Cole's outraged that Luna would do this to such a loving, compassionate creature like Sable.
Now, this made no sense.
The Oddities are tending to Sable's injuries backstage. So I mean, the Oddities are stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? Because Luna's in the Oddities, and then they're pals with Sable.
So I don't understand this, right? Like, Luna has been in the Oddities since day one. Luna has been with the Oddities. Luna has danced with the Oddities. Luna has gotten her hair cut for the Oddities. Luna has been a part of that group, right? Sable palled around with the Oddities for a week, like 1 week. And then Michael Cole is outraged, saying, how could Luna do this to Sable after all Sable's done for the Oddities? Like, what did she do for them? She was nice to them for 1 week and then forgot they existed. That's not like she's not been part of the group in so long. That was months ago. So I don't understand why we're meant to believe that the Oddities are like tending to Sable and don't care about Luna. The Oddities are terrible people, and I don't want to say that about my beloved Kurgan, but why are they so enamored of Sable when like Luna has been part of their group since day one? I don't understand why they're not on Luna's side here. And obviously, like, Luna and Sable have some residual resentment too, right? Like, the artist formerly known as Goldust days probably still linger in Luna's mind. And I don't think Luna was all that happy when Sable was trying to pal around with the Oddities and pretend like she was their leader, because Luna's like, hello, I'm here and nobody's paying attention to me. But Luna was kind of gracious, right? Like, she let Sable be part of the group. They sort of like got along well enough to try to, move forward and move past the resentment. But if there's a chance at the women's title on the line, why would the Oddities be backing Sable instead of Luna, who's one of their own?
Well, I think that they're it's not that they don't want Luna to go for the women's title, it's the way she went about it. She was under a mask, she attacks her from behind. She was being a heel, Sondra, and the Oddities are nice people. And they want to dance and have fun, and they don't want one of their team to just be attacking somebody under a mask.
I mean, maybe it's just my distaste for Sable at the moment, but I am proud of Luna for taking an opportunity because she's been overlooked
Even on
for far
a,
too long.
even on, even to a loving, compassionate creature like Sable?
When has Sable been loving or compassionate?
If she can show compassion in her face, I'd love to see it.
I mean, when she got the rose from Tori, she just looked vaguely bored.
She did. Up next, though, we get a European Championship match. X-Pac wrestles the Big Boss Man. We see that we talk. We see the previous night that Kane beat X-Pac in a non-title match. This is a continuation of his punishment for doing the Bronco Buster to Shane last week. X-Pac is really over with the crowd. They love him, and you know when he's making his comeback, it's pretty good. And then Tess tries to run in and interfere, but in a pretty decent piece of continuity, Val Venus runs down to make the save because obviously Tess cost him the hardcore title for whatever reason
In
as a
a hardcore
DQ.
match that had a disqualification.
Yep, Eero Hepner. So yeah, X-Pac and Big Boss Man, it's a double DQ because of all the interference. But I thought the match was fun enough.
The match was pretty fun. X-Pac's great. Like when X-Pac is not speaking, he is great at wrestling. And I think he makes it very easy to get behind him. I think because he's a smaller guy, and when he's wrestling someone like the Big Boss Man, you know, he seems like a sympathetic character. I just it's that whole thing where like if DX just wouldn't speak and if Triple H just like went away to the sun, then I think I would like them a lot more.
Up next, though, is one of my favourite things of all time. The Vince McMahon training vignettes for the Royal Rumble are like what I live for.
They are
Like,
great.
he's just so good. So Shane McMahon is this like merciless, you know, like Hitler-like trainer, trying to get Vince to you know train, and Vince is complaining the whole time when he's doing sit-ups with weights. He's drinking egg yolks, and there's a bit where he's just like, I think he's doing sit-ups or whatever, and he just keeps going, I hate Austin! I hate Austin! The whole time. Oh, it cracked me up. And
Well, and Shane's egging him on, though, too. He's like, who do you hate? Who do you hate? And he's like, Austin. Austin. I hate Austin. And it was kind of funny during this vignette, though, that I realized that Stone Cold Steve Austin has not been on TV in the past, was it like 2 weeks or so? He's been off television. I kind of forgot about him. Like,
Well, but he's—I mean, he's not really in a program right now, right? Like,
he's not
when he
really in a
beat The Undertaker,
program.
that was kind of the end of it.
And I just, it kind of reminded me now. I mean, the comparisons between Becky Lynch and Steve Austin, everyone's making them. But it was interesting, right? Because Becky Lynch was off television for 1 week after she got her face broken by Nia Jax. And I missed Becky Lynch on that episode of SmackDown. I was like, where's Becky Lynch? What's Becky Lynch going to do? I cannot wait to see what Becky Lynch is going to do next. And when she came back the next week, it was this big thing and it was this big fanfare. And we were so glad to see her. And I'm just finding that I don't feel the same way about Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I'm like, I'm trying. I'm not. There's no reason for me to actively hate Stone Cold Steve Austin or anything like that, and I don't hate him,
I think he's
but
just
it's
not really
just.
done much. I mean, Austin's in this weird period where they're not really doing anything with him yet because they're gearing up to the Rumble. He's injured. And the program he was in after Survivor Series was that program with Undertaker that wasn't great.
Yeah,
So
so it's just kind of interesting the parallels there for me because I'm way more into what Becky Lynch is doing than I am into what Stone Cold Steve Austin is doing, and he was like the most popular wrestler of all time.
But you know what's
So
funny is like, because I really like Becky Lynch as well, but like I didn't notice until after the Christmas Day episode that Asuka, Charlotte, and Becky weren't on it. It was only
oh, I
after the show
noticed.
when I was like, oh wow, and they weren't on that. So yeah, I guess it's just different strokes, different folks, different people
Yeah, I
notice
mean,
different
different things
things.
just hit different people. But I mean, Vince saying, you know, like, oh, I hate Austin, and that being his motivation for the Royal Rumble, I was like, oh, right, because I guess that is the main through line, is still Austin McMahon. But I guess because there's so much Corporation DX stuff going on, and because I'm obviously way more into the Mankind Vince McMahon story than I am into the Austin McMahon story, then Austin almost seems kind of like secondary or tertiary
Yeah,
to me.
he does right now, yeah. So after that phenomenal Vince vignette,
The vignettes are great. They're really great. Like
oh, they get better.
him drinking the eggs and everything. Like
So good. Goldust and Steve Blackman, what a duo, against Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett ends when Steve Blackman schoolboys Owen Hart in about 3.5 minutes to get the win. Deborah's
well,
now.
because Deborah distract. Because Dan Severn came back, that's why.
Yeah, Dan Severn randomly walks out in a neck brace and confronts Owen, and that's when Blackman and Goldust get the win. But like, I don't know if Blackman was meant to like get him quicker, because it took him a long time to do the roll up. So
I mean,
Owen
it
Hart's starting
seems
to
like
stand
Steve
there.
Blackman often looks like he's asleep in the ring, and I think that might have been the case here, where he had actually fallen asleep and then forgot what he was supposed to do. I don't really know.
And
This wasn't
there's a
very
great bit though.
good.
So first of all, they've taken Deborah McMichael's name just to Deborah now, because she actually divorced Steve McMichael in October, so now she's just Deborah.
Was she not just Deborah before? I didn't remember that they were calling her Deborah McMichaels.
When she debuted, she was Deborah McMichael,
Oh, okay.
but they've taken that away. But what I loved at the end was after Goldust and Steve Blackman win, Dan Severn just really slowly walks up the ramp, and the heels are like really close to him. So they have to slow down because Severn's just walking really calmly.
Dan Severn does not look like he's very interested in being there.
No.
He's like, why did I come all the way to Albany for this?
We see Triple H
And
and
I can't really blame him though. Like, this angle is terrible. Like, what even was the point of this? Dan Severn shows up in his neck brace, right? And Owen Hart's just like, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. And Owen's like, bless Owen's heart. Like, he doesn't care about this storyline either. And you can totally tell. But he's also a really good performer. So he's kind of trying to sell it like he's seen the Ghost of Christmas Past or something like that. And I mean, I guess the story is still supposed to be Owen Hart broke Dan Severn's neck and feels awful about it. So is he like supposed to be questioning his place in wrestling again? Is that what we're supposed to get from this? Like, his Dan Severn confronting him because he came out of retirement, and Dan Severn is, you know, affronted by this when Owen Hart said that he was retiring after he broke Dan Severn's neck. Why doesn't Owen Hart react this way to Steve Austin every time he sees them, every time he sees him? None of this really makes any sense.
Yeah, it's very weird. Then we get Triple H and China pretty focused backstage at Gorilla Position. Then we cut it to outside where the Acolytes are beating up Dennis Knight in the parking lot. They toss him into the boot of a car and drive. So they kidnap Dennis Knight. Any thoughts, Sandra?
I mean, best thing the Acolytes have done by far, but I would appreciate if they just took that car, drove it all the way to the sun, and then stayed there.
I mean, that's not very fair to old Dennis. You know, he's trying.
I would appreciate if he didn't. I would appreciate if he just went away.
I hope he never goes away, just for the glory of how you react to him.
I just don't like him.
You hide it very well, though. So we get Triple H versus Ken Shamrock for the Intercontinental Championship. Obviously, the backstory here is that Triple H never lost the title, and he had to surrender it the night of Judgment Day. And then, obviously, Shamrock ended up battering his knee. Shamrock ends up doing the ankle lock to Triple H and will not release it, which gets him DQ'd. I thought the match was pretty decent. I quite like the finish of Shamrock just being maniacal and not letting go. What do you think?
This is my favorite Triple H match that we've seen in quite a while, actually. Ken Shamrock is great. Like, we know that I love Ken Shamrock, but I thought the storytelling of the match was very good, with Triple H kind of selling the leg, Ken Shamrock being maniacal and going after Triple H's injured leg right at first. And, you know, commentary is like, you know, Triple H is 100% cleared. He's totally ready to go. And then Lawler calls Cole out on it at one point. He's like, I thought you said his knee was 100%. And Michael Cole's like, well, it was 100% until Ken Shamrock decided to batter it, right? But that's good pro wrestling storytelling. Like, go after a body part and then work that body part and then, you know, wrench it into submission so that that person cannot move anymore. And then you win the match. Like, that's just basic stuff, right? And I think they did it very well here. Ken Shamrock and Triple H worked really well together, and it's to kind of the downfall of Ken Shamrock when he's trying to win a title, but it works well for Ken Shamrock when he, you know, holds on a submission too long and is maniacal and gets himself disqualified, because that is a way to keep his title, right? If he's the champion, then yeah, absolutely. Like, he's going to get himself disqualified because he's a mean, mean, dastardly, baddie man. So this, yeah, all of the character alignments actually were kind of working for me in a way, because Triple H felt kind of sympathetic, which is not something I normally feel toward Triple H. And I just love maniacal Ken Shamrock. The crowd hates Ken Shamrock though. Like, they hate him so much. And I just find it really interesting because he's my favorite, and well, one of my favorites. Like, Ken Shamrock and Mankind are probably my two favorites. And the crowd just hates him so much. And I kind of wonder if I had watched wrestling in 1998, if I would have liked Ken Shamrock, or if I would have thought that he was an awful, awful person. Because I kind of feel like I would still be into him. Because it's not like I've been into him because of any like weird Sandra reasons. I just think he's great and a badass.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been a really good heel. And obviously, if DX aren't for you, then obviously whoever they're against is going to be a reason for you to like him.
It was kind of cathartic to see Triple H's leg just get essentially ripped off. I kind of enjoyed it.
I liked the story, though. The story was really good. And then after the match, you see Corporation DX Brawl. Kane reluctantly gets involved. Then we see, like, Kevin Kelly interview Billy Gunn. But before Billy Gunn can really say much, Shamrock crashes the segment and doesn't really go anywhere. Like, what was this?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. It seems like there's a lot of that, like just people fighting, which is fine. Like, it's a wrestling program. People should be fighting. But I don't know. I feel like we're veering toward more shenanigans than the show can handle sometimes.
Yeah, we are at like shenanigan overload.
Yes.
Speaking of which, so Mark Henry and D'Lo Brown come out. Mark Henry apologizes to China for fooling around with PMS. PMS come out and Mark Henry hides behind D'Lo, who calls PMS ring rats.
Yep.
China then comes out.
That's a thing.
And sticks
so, okay, my question, because, like, before we get into it, my question about last week's sexual escapade of Mark Henry, like, am I meant to believe that Mark Henry was not enjoying himself on that table?
Yes.
Because I thought Mark Henry was enjoying himself plenty on that table. Like, I don't know what it says about, like, just, I don't know, whatever. But it didn't seem like he was trying to get out of the situation or anything like that. Like, I didn't realize that them, like, whipping him and stuff was meant to be seen as abuse and not just, like, a good time.
I mean, I guess it's Vince Russo. Do you know what I mean? It's like, the deeper you delve into it, the harder it's going to get to justify it.
But you know what I mean? Like, because when Mark Henry stumbles out last week, like, to try to assist D'Lo Brown, he looked ravaged, but he didn't look like, I'm so upset at what they did to me.
The bigger problem for me is when China comes out, she sticks up for Mark Henry and tells them to stay away from her man. So, like, you're okay with what you did last week then? Like, are you two officially a couple? I don't understand what's happening here.
I mean, it's not like China and Mark Henry were officially a couple before he went to fool around with Terry and Jacqueline, right? Like, they weren't.
All I'm saying is if I'm dating somebody, mm-hmm. Now, first of all, I don't really do the date multiple people at one time thing because it stresses me out. I can't do it. I feel like I'm being false. I have to, like, commit my time to one person at a time. That's just the way I work, okay. Right? So I don't really get the people who do multiple at one time. It doesn't compute with me. But if you are doing that, then... So last week we're meant to believe that China and Mark Henry were kind of dating, but not exclusive. Mm-hmm. Then he does that whole thing where he gets basically, like, played with.
Right.
And then now she's saying, stay away from my man?
I think what we're meant to believe, and this is problematic on a number of levels, but I think what we're meant to believe is that China saw what Mark Henry was doing with Terry and Jacqueline, and... even though China was hesitant to call Mark Henry her boyfriend because, you know, the whole relationship did start with abuse, she got jealous of Mark Henry being with those ladies and has now decided to claim him or something.
I guess so.
Question mark. Which, I mean, like, that can happen, you know, like if you're seeing multiple people and it's agreed upon between, you know, two people, it's like, okay, no, like, we're kind of half together, but we're not. And, like, we can see other people. It's fine. Like, sometimes there comes a point in that relationship where you say, okay, I think I would prefer it if we did not see other people because I don't like seeing you with these other women. And that's fine. Like, that is a natural progression of a relationship. I just don't understand why it has to go to this level for them to get together. And, like, and Mark Henry seems pleased by this. You know, he seems pleased that China is with him because I think he still has eyes for China and he just wanted to, like, get off last week or something like that.
Maybe he was doing it to deliberately get China to kind of fight for him.
Maybe then
Jacqueline...
Because that's always a healthy way to start a relationship, is to sleep with someone else and hope the other person gets jealous. I always find that those relationships work out super well.
I feel like when we're all said and done down the line with Mark Henry and China, healthy is not going to be the word you're going to use about it. I can promise you that. And you don't know why yet, but I can't wait. I cannot wait.
Oh, I don't know why yet.
It's so good. Like, you don't even... Like, you can't imagine where it goes. Like... You're going to be so baffled, but it's going to be the greatest thing ever. I'm going to need you to send me live thoughts. I'll tell you what week it's coming up. But anyway, okay. But so
Like, I genuinely have no idea what this is about. Jerry Lawler pissed me off right here when he goes, Terry's stomach is starting to show for sure.
I mean, she looks like in the best shape I've ever seen a woman be in.
Right? She looks incredible. And are they like, because I kind of almost figured that they were just going to forget the whole Terry being pregnant thing, but they're not because Lawler keeps bringing it up. And how far along would she be at this point? Like, when did she announce that she was pregnant with Val Venus's baby that turns out not to be Val Venus's baby?
Like a month ago?
A month ago? Okay. So, I mean, she wouldn't necessarily be showing, but she'd probably be a little bloaty or whatever at this point, right? Because, hormones and stuff. I don't know. I've never been pregnant. I don't know how it works. But she looks great. She looks incredible. And soon they're going to have to do something to deal with the whole pregnancy situation, and I think I might know where it goes, and I don't really want to know where it goes. But yeah, it's frustrating that that has to be part of the storyline.
Well, Jacqueline does not heed the advice of stay away from my man, and Chyna shoves her to the mat. Mark Henry's jumping up and down for joy. And now, what I loved here, I don't know if you noticed this, is a great little piece of continuity where Terry ran away. Now, why would Terry run away? Because Terry remembers what Chyna did to her before as
That makes
Marlena.
sense. I also thought that Terry might want to get out of the way of physical harm, given that she is purported to be pregnant.
Yes, but also she remembers what
But
China did
also,
to her.
she remembers what Chyna did to her. And so that makes sense. Like, I like the continuity of Terry and Chyna. I do. I think that's good. Did you notice that? Like, I'm pretty sure Jacqueline wasn't wearing underwear. Like, because.
I'm very sure she rarely does.
Right. And did you notice when she got pushed down by China that she just like spread her legs wide open and was like, oh my gosh. Like Jacqueline just seems to love showing off her body, but she doesn't get a chance to do it in the same way as Sable because like they don't present Jacqueline the same way that they present Sable as just like a pair of walking tits. But Jacqueline seems like, no, I want to get my tits out and I want to flash my vag to everyone. And she's well into it. Good for her.
More power to you. If you've got it, flaunt it.
She looks great. Like, if I looked like that, I'd probably want to show off my body too.
Do you remember her at the Royal Rumble 2000 swimsuit contest when she started doing the kind of like lasso thing? Or like
Oh,
she was
yeah.
whipping her own ass?
Yes.
The corporation have another meeting backstage, and they're going through the locker room looking for someone. We get a video package that recaps 1998, but they don't put anything in chronological order, so it just makes no sense. Like, it's
This
just.
video package was
It
baffling.
was so like because it there was like it made like a lot of the stuff in it made sense to put in, but just like why didn't you put it chronologically?
Yeah. No, it was haphazard. It was all over the place. I mean, it felt like 1998.
The corporation attacked the Godfather backstage, who's booked to face Billy Gunn next, so that means that instead,
I appreciated that about the corporation.
Kane's gonna face Billy Gunn, and Ken Shamrock attacks Billy Gunn a couple of minutes out of the match, applies the ankle lock, Kane chokeslams Billy Gunn, and the Stooges make him do two more chokeslams, and before Kane can hit the move again, DX runs in to make the save. What did you think of this?
This was, I mean, it was fun enough. There, again, lots of shenanigans. It's just all corporation run-ins. And I think I'm getting kind of desensitized to corporation run-ins and shenanigans. So, like, I kind of like Billy Gunn as a wrestler. So I'm getting a little less, like, hostile toward everyone in DX. I think it's mostly I just, like, hate Triple H. Road Dogg as hardcore champion seems to be working a little bit better for me. I kind of like X-Pac and I kind of like Billy Gunn, but
And you're in love with China.
and I'm in love with Chyna, obviously, goes without saying. So, oh, it's Chyna's birthday today. Happy birthday, Chyna.
Oh.
R.I.P. I've seen some really nice tweets about her from like Mick Foley and people like that. But yeah, so I mean, this was fun enough, but it's just all of the shenanigans are starting to blend into kind of a mind-numbing hole for me. And I wish that I enjoyed them more because I like shenanigans when they're well placed, but it's just when it's all the time, it gets a little harder to pay attention and I can't even really remember what happened.
Then we get The Rock's coming out for commentary for the main event. We see Shawn Michaels arriving backstage. So Shawn Michaels is just choosing to arrive like 20 minutes before the end of the show. Cool.
So he's so late for work, right? Like he is so late for work here.
Almost like he knows what's going to happen.
But I feel like he should be fired at this point, right? Like, it would make sense for him to be fired because he's so late for work. Oh, one of the other things about Kane. Sorry, I just remembered. They called him Corporate Kane.
Oh.
And I didn't realize that they were actually going to call him Corporate Kane. And it's not the same when he's not wrestling in slacks and doesn't have a mask on.
Can I just say, Kane's stomach is glorious in 1998.
He looks great.
Look how trim he is.
I know. I mean, he's what? He's like 30 here.
Yeah, something like that. Early 30s.
So, yeah, he looks great. Significantly better than he looks now. Not surprising.
So the main event is Road Dogg versus Mankind for the hardcore title. Rock's on commentary. Rock's putting himself over in commentary over both of the people in the ring.
My favorite thing is when The Rock was like mocking Road Dogg's entrance, right? Like mocking the promo, and he's like, "Yeah, no one wants to hear that. Yeah, that's real creative, real innovative, saying the same thing night in, night out. Be like The Rock, be electrifying like The Rock."
So
And I'm
foolish,
just
right?
like, "It doesn't matter what you think, Rock, for the millions and millions. If you smell what The Rock is cooking, like really, you are calling someone out on catchphrases. Bullshit."
So Mankind Road Dogg have this match, and then The Rock ends up leaving the booth and interferes to try and help Road Dogg. Fans are going mental over The Rock. The Rock ends up getting pushed back into the kind of sea of humanity. He ends up going back to the locker room. So he ends up doing the rock bottom to Mankind, which helps Road Dogg retain his championship. And at the end of it, Road Dogg kind of sees how he won the match and is pretty annoyed at how he won it, which I thought was a nice touch for him to
It is a
show that,
nice
like.
touch. If he's supposed to be a good guy, he's like, I mean, yes, I want to retain my title, but I didn't want to win it via dastardly means. And Road Dogg, you know, being pals with Mankind at this point, he's like, I especially didn't want to win against an opponent I respect via dastardly means because of The Rock. So yeah, that it was kind of effective character work there from Road Dogg.
And then the main event is Vince McMahon comes out. He calls it Shawn Michaels. He talks about how, he was the reason for Shawn's success. He shows footage from March when Shawn said that he didn't need Vince as much as Vince needed him. Vince then proceeds to fire Shawn and parts ways by saying that he doesn't lay down for anybody. And predictably, Shawn Michaels delivers sweet chin music and then dry humps Vince before the corporation run out and Shawn runs away. I know it didn't work for you. I thought it was a pretty fun segment at the end. Like, I don't know why though Vince would think that, right, I'm in the ring on my own with Shawn Michaels. I'm gonna fire him. I'm gonna then kind of degrade him, and then he's not gonna super kick me.
I mean, of course Shawn Michaels is going to super kick him. Of course he is.
So again, just not the cleverest move by Vince.
No, Vince McMahon is not always very intelligent about these situations.
A couple of news notes though.
I have
On
a question.
okay.
Okay, so I can't remember when it was, but there was a point in the show where Michael Cole had the weirdest line on commentary, right? He said, like, I think it might have been during Road Dogg. I can't remember. But he's like, we love seeing all these signs, like signs in the crowd, but keep it clean. Like he actually says these words in 1998, right? And so then I was looking around at the signs and I wrote down a few of them that were in the crowd, like right at that moment. Like there was Scott and Eric can suck it. Ass. Take the hose pimpin'. Strip China. Who just shit? Exclamation mark. I love porn. I'm stoned. Right. So, I mean, like your standard 1998 signs, but then I kind of realized like none of those are super offensive, not like some of the ones we've seen before. And I was wondering, like, because that sounded very much like a fed line to him, like he was meant to say something about keeping the signs clean and that they have the right to confiscate signs. And I was wondering if USA Network had cracked down on signs or if they had said something or if there was any reason for this that you know of, because it just seemed like a really odd line of commentary in the middle of a random match. I think it might have been during Billy Gunn versus Kane, actually.
There's nothing I know about, but I know that Phil Mushnick at this point was writing columns all the time, slating the WWF. So it could have just been that they thought, well, if we try and say something like that as a way to minimize the shit that we're gonna get.
Okay.
But I don't know of anything specifically.
Because the signs, like, after he mentioned it, I noticed the signs weren't quite as plentiful in this crowd as maybe they had been before. So I was kind of wondering if some got confiscated that night or something. I don't know. It was just interesting. I'd be interested to find out.
Yeah, I'll try and see if I can find out. Some other news though. So they are hopeful that they are. I think they've just signed him. They've just signed the Giant from WCW, Paul White.
Wow. Well, it's the Giant.
They're hoping to debut him in mid-February so he can be a major part of WrestleMania. There is concern regarding his conditioning, discipline, and attitude. The fact that he started losing weight and put it all back on doesn't speak well for him. And obviously WWF's road schedule is much better, much worse, sorry, so is he going to be able to handle it? Steven Regal wasn't brought back this week. The feeling is that he's not ready yet. Dr. Death, Steve Williams, is going to start back soon. He's physically ready. He's recovered from the Brawl for All.
After his incredible showing in the Brawl for All.
Exactly, yep. Then we... What else was the news? Mick Foley officially won the Time Magazine internet poll for Man of the Year with 192,365 votes. So there you go.
Go Mick Foley.
Sable's had two cover shots done for Playboy, one in the black cat suit and the other was wearing nothing, hiding strategically behind her women's title belt. They also... Steve Austin, an update on him. Basically, Austin has been taken off all house shows until the Royal Rumble because he needs to heal as much as he can because he's got a major role in that show. He missed these tapings, but he was brought in for the January 4th show. It's taped the next night. Also because that week or that night they were going to be filming the WWE commercial for the Super Bowl, which he's a big part of. And the reason they did the angle on this show, turning Shawn Michaels' babyface, as I said, stemmed from his latest medical opinion in his back the weekend before Christmas, told that he needs surgery to fuse his discs. He's undergoing that in a few weeks, so the firing and subsequent injury angle after he superkicked Vince was basically to do something to write him off.
That was a babyface turn?
When he turned on Vince, yeah. There's still more to happen next week. So Shawn's on next week's show, and then that's kind of the end of Shawn for a while.
I feel like I just watch this show and just think it's a show full of heels. And so it's like when a heel turns on a heel, it's like he's just a terrible person, but now they don't like each other.
And also there was plans to do a Bart Gunn versus Tank Abbott Brawl for All rules match, but it fell through when WWF didn't want to pay the $55,000 that Tank Abbott wanted.
Bart Gunn versus Tank Abbott. Can you imagine?
It would be something.
I mean... I kind of forgot about Bart Gunn, which is a shame, because after he won the Brawl for All, I feel like they could have used that in some sort of capacity, but then they just didn't.
So, where is your thumb for this episode of Raw, Sandra? Down, middle, up?
I think this one's a thumbs in the middle. Like, I didn't really like it, but it wasn't as bad as last week, and it had some decent stuff. Like, I actually enjoyed the main event quite a bit. This one felt less DX versus Corporation in a way. I don't know. Thumbs in the middle, I guess.
There you go. It's a thumbs up show for me. I thought they did a good job with... Because I'm kind of like... It's weird for me because as someone who kind of liked DX, and obviously every week you talk about how much you hate them, so like I'm always like, oh yeah, they did this. But I actually thought this was a pretty good week for them. And even though
I'm starting to come around a little bit, though. I said I liked Road Dogg's character development, and I'm, you know, like X-Pac when he doesn't speak, and Billy Gunn's a good wrestler.
You know, that's what I mean, but I think this week... they did good stuff with DX. You know, the Triple H match was good, the Billy Gunn stuff was good, the Road Dogg stuff was good, the X-Pac stuff was good. So, yeah, I think overall it was a thumbs-up show for me. Next week is going to be the show that Sandra knows what happens, but this is the big show. January 4th, 1999.
So it's this week that it's happening. And it'll be interesting. I knew it was coming soon.
Yep, we've got... I'm trying to think of anything else I can tell you that... Oh, wait a minute. Is it next? Okay, no, I thought the thing with Mark Henry was next week, but I don't think it is. But yeah, I'm curious what you think about next week's show. We've got Al Snow versus Road Dogg in a Hardcore Championship match. We've also got D'Lo Brown against Edge.
Ooh, that should be good.
We've got a Royal Rumble qualifying match with Triple H and Mankind. Mark Henry versus Goldust and some other stuff that I'm sure you guys know what it's about. But I think next week, I'm curious because you obviously know the title change, but you don't know any of the story of that night, right? Of how it all happens. So
I don't. I've never seen it in context. I've only seen the moment. So I guess we'll see how it builds up throughout the show.
I would be very surprised if you don't love it.
I'm guessing I'm gonna love it. I mean,
this whole show is basically the culmination of what you've been enjoying with Vince and Mankind for months.
yeah, no,
So,
I've been looking forward to this because I knew it happened in January. I wasn't sure when, so
January
I'm definitely
14th
looking
tonight.
forward to it.
So yeah, so that's the end of 1998 for Raw with us. Thank you for listening to all of our shows this year. Thank you for all your support. We hope you have a great new year. Sandra, what are the plugs?
Okay, find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon. Bonus content, loads of stuff. Help support the show. Help us keep doing what we're doing. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Go to YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of interview content. And pretty much everything else can be found at InsideTheRopes.co.uk. No tickets are available for sale quite yet, but there is an announcement coming soon.
Yes, there's an announcement coming imminently, which it'll be before the new year, I think. I think we're going to announce, well, actually, I think we'll have announced by today. But I won't say it just in case we haven't. But head over to our
Right.
Twitter, and if we've, yeah, we should have been able to announce it by now. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Sandra, I hope you have a good new year if you get chance to get home for it.
You know what, I'm gonna try. Because I think we're closing at 11:30, so I'm gonna try and like close the store as quickly as possible, and then like, I mean, not like drive unsafely home, but I'm hoping that I'll actually get to like toast midnight with my husband.
That'd be
Would
nice.
be nice, you know. Doesn't normally happen, so we'll see what happens this year. The joys of working retail.
The joys of working retail. Okay, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you've had a great year. I hope you have a good New Year's, and we will speak to you next week when finally, you, Adrian, he did it. See you next
Oh, I'm
week,
so
everybody.
excited. Bye.
Bye.
Sexy, I've got the looks, the drive should go wild. I've got the moves that really move them. I said chill up and down their spine. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. I make them hot, I make them shiver, their knees get weak whenever I'm around.